Near the end of Matthew's account of Jesus' life, he tells this parable to the disciples. Kingdom of heaven shall be compared to 10 maidens who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. But at midnight there was a cry, "Behold, the bridegroom, come to meet him." Then all those maidens rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise replied, "Perhaps there will not be enough for us and for you. Go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other maidens came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he replied, "Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour." I always get a little reflective this time of year. A couple of days ago, the summer solstice came and went. Solstice being the day where we get the most sun's visibility than any other day of the year. The light is the longest on the summer solstice. And then every day to follow, a little bit less, minute or two less daylight today than yesterday, than the day before. And it kind of reminds me, metaphorically, of how, well, there's less light than there was, and less time than there was. And in a sense, like the parable, the lights are getting just incrementally dimmer each day. We don't know the day and the hour that the lights will go out. In fact, there's no reason to think this year won't be any different than any other, that around December 21st, the lights will be the shortest, but then pick up again, you know, and things cycle. "You know not the day nor the hour when the bridegroom will come, when the world will end, or when it will end for us." It's not hard to figure out that most of us have probably lived more days than we will. In other words, we're beyond the solstice point, as it were. How do we live with that? What will we do? Reminds me of a conversation I had several years ago now with a friend who was about 6-7 months into the 11 or so months that he would live after a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer. We were having lunch. And, you know, he was feeling a little better than the day before, but, you know, things were progressing to where everybody knew they were going much sooner than later. And he was sort of reflective, and he said, "You know, it's virtually certain that my life will end because of this cancer. Although not completely. He could have been hit by a bus the next day. You never know." And he said, "But I'm not dying today. And I won't before I have to." And I said, "Well, you know, that's not unlike all the rest of us, really. You know, we're not dying today. We won't before we have to. And we will." But that perspective gives us an opportunity to do what I would call trimming our lamps a little bit. That's how we live with both the knowledge of the inevitability and also do so with a little less fear. This parable scared me half to death when I was a kid. Like, "Oh, what? Watch out." Well, maybe watch. Pay attention to the value of each day. If I knew, for example, and it's an interesting question to ponder, if I knew that 3 months from today, September 23rd, that a Lubbock driver would T-bone me into a semi, and the day and the hour would come, how would I live differently than I do now? If I knew the day and the hour, at least a little more precisely, that's what I've been thinking about this week. How would I live differently if I knew? I would live differently, first of all. Well, let me put it to you this way. I would find a kid and play the stinky fish game, as I've come to call it. What's that? Well, it goes back about a year. Lily, our now 4-year-old, was visiting, and just on a whim, I was in the kitchen, and I just said, "Lily, come here a minute." Little trusting soul toddles over, you know, and I said, "Put your head back, close your eyes, and open your mouth," which she did, trusting soul that she is. And I reached into the refrigerator, grabbed a can of Ready Whip, and shot her mouth full of Ready Whip. She thought that was the most wonderful thing. And, you know, we've done that now and again, you know. And this last time when she was here a week or so ago, I was in the kitchen and I said, "Lily, come here. You want some stinky fish?" She said, "No." And then I pantomimed, you know. "Oh," she goes, "oh, stinky fish." So she comes out and we do that whole thing. And I said, "We're going to call it stinky fish now because nobody else will want it, right?" Well, of course, it made us laugh. And that's the point. I would play the stinky fish game or some such thing every chance I had because I would trim my lamps with laughter. If I knew not the day or the hour, but knew it was close or even knew when it was, I would trim my lamps also. Well, let me put it to you this way. I would link the memory of me to some money in some way. We saw a show at the Cactus Theater last night, and like every show of that sort where you go, the program or the screen or some such thing has a list of producers club or special donors or super double secret platinum givers and so on. You get your name in the program in some way. And we all contribute to causes that, you know, at some level, put our name somewhere because we've contributed something. Well, if I knew the day or the hour, or even if I didn't but knew it was close, I would link the memory of me to some contribution towards something I care about. Some musical or theatrical venue in perpetuity in some kind of way. A cause that I care about, the food bank, some such thing. I would find a way to put my name in a program somehow or some way and regard that as lamp trimming. That would it perhaps even, you know, continue to do some good for some person or some organization after the day and the hour arrived. So that's one way I would link memory and money. The other way, and this sort of came to me this week too, I got an email about midweek of the sort that I've been getting pretty much every time, or every year about this time of year, from the rep from our pension fund over at work. And there's going to be pension fund reps on campus this week, and you can have an appointment with them if you'd like to learn more about all matters related to retirement. And every year, I've just deleted it and said, "Well, that's cool. I'm glad they're doing that." And this year, I didn't delete the email. Not quite sure what I'm going to do, but I didn't delete the email, and I'm thinking about it. Because the time is shorter than it was last year, you know, and you got to start thinking about this stuff sooner or later, and actually, I'm a little bit late on this. But it also caused me to remember something, that 22 years ago, my grandmother died, and in the course of settling her estate, you know, most of which was settled pretty simply with her only child, my mother, sort of through the side door, I got a CD that was TOD'd just to me of a small amount of money. And it was at a time when I was just finishing grad school, and I paid a couple bills and then decided, you know what, I think I'm going to play blackjack with the rest of this just for fun. I mean, stock market, same thing. She had made a little bit of money in the stock market and was kind of proud about that. So I said, okay, you know what, we'll put the rest of it, you know, as it grows, in a nice safe, you know, the stuff that the reps tell you to do. This little bit of money we're going to play around with. And I was looking at that fund, you know, now 22 years later, and I'm going, well, that did pretty well. You know, I mean, it's not going to allow me to live in, you know, the south of France for my retirement, but, you know, to the extent that there's fun to be had, this is going to help a lot. And it started with that little bit of thing that my grandmother left, this small CD, and I kind of decided to do a little of that for the grandkids that are in our life now. And so the other day I just took something from that fund and made a little bit of a fund that, you know, went to the kids. And I think that was my way of trimming the lamp a little bit. I don't know what that's going to be like for them in 22 years or longer, but it'll be something, and we'll see. So if I knew the time was short, or if I even knew the day and the hour, I would find a way to laugh with somebody. And I would link in some way a little bit of money, or maybe more, to my memory. Laughter, generosity. And finally, I would shore up and cherish the ways I'm in touch with the people that love me. I've got an app on my iPhone now. It's sort of a joke in our family. Jeannie's got one. The kids have the same thing. And when you activate it, and if they've given you such permission, it will show you on a screen, and you can even Google Earth the picture of it, exactly where their iPhone is. In other words, or where they are, presumably. Just for fun, the other day, Jeannie and I were in the living room together, and I found out where her iPhone was. Google Earth said it was next door. Never mind. It's an interesting notion. And by the way, you don't need that app. Every time you turn on one of those things, it's pinging somewhere, and somebody knows exactly where you are and what you've been doing, and you don't want to know. But anyway, I do want people that love me to know where I am, and I want to know where they are. And I would want that more urgently if time was short. You know, I would want to spend a good bit of that time in close touch, maybe literally close touch. And I would want them to know what I was experiencing, and I'd want to know more about what they were experiencing. I would activate that app as much as possible, and maybe even to the exclusion of doing useful things. I don't know. But if I knew the time was short, and if I knew even the exact day and hour, I would trim my lamps with the in-touchness that in some ways technology makes available to us, but it's also just a metaphor for what is really the best of times, when you are in close emotional, spiritual, physical contact with someone who loves you and will not stop loving you until you're not there to love, and then they will love your memory, as it were. Well, we don't know the day or the hour. But we do know that that it will come. And it occurs to me that trimming the lamps with laughter and generosity and contact is not something we have to wait and reserve for the time when we know a little more about the day or the hour. It wouldn't hurt us at all to have our lives characterized by more laughter and more generosity and more time and contact. And it makes me think of maybe one of the most important reasons to pray, in that when we pray, we remind ourselves that God knows where we are, that we're in touch and we're in contact, which even a prayer is kind of a metaphor for the moment when the hour and the day comes and we reestablish contact with the one who created us. Well, in reality, it's not much different than it is now. And it makes the notion of that less frightening. It makes each day a treasure to cherish. And it brings us all closer to where we will inevitably be in constant and eternal touch at that day and on that hour. Amen.